I thought about what kind of sermon would I preach on New Member Sunday, and the thing that kept coming to my mind was a wrestling story. So, first we'll introduce the sermon with a wrestling story, and then we'll move on to Life is a River, Meet You on the Bank. My senior year in high school, I was on going to be a championship wrestling team. And at the end of the year, my record was 4-4-1. We had one more match to go. Our team was 8-0, and the team we were going to wrestle was 7-1. And that team had beat us 2 years prior in the last match of the year to win the championship. And so we had wrestlers on our team. John Melko was undefeated. Several people had only lost one match. So, I mean, they were champions on our team. Three county champions, a couple state champions. So you would think, in thinking about a team and a championship team, that these were the people that would get the spotlight put on them. And Thursday before the match, Thursday being a light practice, the coach said, "Wilson, you get over here." Because the next day I had to wrestle the previous county champ. So I had my own anxiety about life at that particular point in time. And he said, "This match depends on you." And I'm going, "Oh my God, this match depend on me. You know, I'm 4-4-1, right?" And he said, "This match depends on you because I have figured out the lineups and have compared the lineups, and your match is the pivotal match." So I'm thinking, he says, "It is absolutely crucial that you do not get pinned." And I'm thinking, he's going to fire me up to beat the county champ, you know. It's absolutely crucial because if you get pinned, the other team gets 6 points, and if you don't, the other team gets 3 points. And as he worked that out, and I've got to thinking about that over the years of all the things that he could have said to me about what makes a championship team champions, obviously, but it wasn't. It was the people in the middle of the team. It was the 4-4-1s, the 5-4-1s. It was the people who change the paper in the bathrooms. It's the people that make the coffee, the people that cut the grass. It's the people that hold the church together. And I'll never forget when he said that to me, I was excited, but then kind of, "Well, what do you think? I'd get pinned?" You know? But you never know what we're called on to do and how we're called on to do it. Because I needed to win that match to be 5-4-1 in order to get a better seed in the tournament. And obviously you want to be seeded higher. But by saying do not get pinned, that took away all kinds of moves that make you vulnerable to get pinned from the bottom. So I had to give up certain moves that we were some good at, some not so good at, and I had to gear my whole process not to get pinned. I couldn't really use everything in my repertoire because it was risky, some of it, to win, which maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't have, but I had to give up something in order to be a member of that team. As we have lived life, isn't that the way life is at times? That we are bound by certain tasks and certain obligations in life. We wish we were free to do other things. We wish we were free to participate with our best selves and be that best self person. But sometimes we are called to make the coffee, to come to choir practice. Today, Many of us are called to go to an opening of a church building. Now, if you're a football fan, you are required to make a sacrifice for that. So our values come into tension with cultural icons and our spiritual life. Of course, 15 minutes up the road, if you go 55 miles an hour, you can be there on time to see the soup. No, I'm kidding. I have not checked that out. And I guess I want to say, when we're members of a community, it isn't always necessarily exciting or always the light is on us. Sometimes it's just the everyday, ordinary things that we have to do to keep a community going. Sometimes on a championship team or on different teams and we participate, sometimes we have to make sacrifices in order to get the task done. And that's just the way the hardness of life sometimes. And I know that I was grateful in that match I didn't get pinned. And I know that the heavyweight person who was winning 8-1 and we were finally going to win the championship did fall down and get pinned. And so you hate, you know, certainly. But after that match, and we lost and everybody was disappointed, the coach came over to me, put his arm around me and said, "Wilson, good job. Good job." And it's kind of odd how the things that you remember in life of being a participant in a team, that other people get all that, but those subtle things that happen in life. Now I want to move to trying to make sense out of the spirituality of who we are and talking about life as a river. Meet you on the bank. And what I want to say about that and communicate about that is that in a sense, we are born in a river. And that river is sometimes gracious, nice, slow-moving, scenic. And sometimes that river is turbulent, stormy. And in your minds, when you're in that river, can you see a bank to crawl up on to get rest? Do you find a place to step out of the river you're in to find rest, to find peace, to find reflection? Will my imagination even go there to find a place outside the river that I have been born into? And the river becomes the story of our lives. And an example of what I mean by that is that right now in our country, we see two rivers really determining which is going to be the dominant river and for the next several years be the dominant story. And we have these two rivers colliding. We have two groups of people that are taught using the same language of economic stimulus. One group says that in our economic stimulus, we want $100 million for family planning and contraception. And how in the world do they figure that's economic stimulus? They figure that that's economic stimulus because there's a group of people in our country, poor women who hold jobs that don't command enough money to have health care to pay for that themselves, but if they are taken care of, that would create a layer in our society of continuity where somebody could have confidence working in jobs, going to school, have confidence in their lives will not be disrupted, and that would build a good foundation for an economic stability. Health care. Pell grants for people to go to college as part of the economic stimulus. Paying for health care, increasing Medicaid to people, increasing Medicare to people. Domestic services to people is part of the narrative, is part of the story, is part of the river of a particular way of life that says this would be economic stimulus, this would strengthen our country. Furthermore, if you have that kind of solid base for middle and lower income people, and they don't have to worry about money, pregnancies, and they don't have to worry about health care, the next thing you know, they begin to feel good about themselves. The next thing you know, they begin to have families. Next thing you know, their kids begin to have hopes and aspirations. Next thing you know, their kids are in Ivy League schools. Next thing you know, their kids are lawyers. Next thing you know, we have Supreme Court justices
who are poor as children,
they might rule differently than Supreme Court judges, justices, or politicians who don't understand what that means. So one narrative, one storyline solidifies the country as a movement toward the betterment of the whole country. Then there's another storyline that says, we need to put money in and immediately jumpstart this economy. And we need to do that not by domestic services, but we need to do that by tax cuts and tax relief. And I, along with many others, are going, haven't we been trying that? And it hasn't worked. But here's two different stories. Here's two different rivers in life moving through time. We, as Unitarian Universalists, it's not our responsibility or to join in and say, yes, I'm a Republican, or yes, I'm a Democrat. That's a mistake to do that. We, as Unitarian Universalists, we are called to climb up on the bank of that river, to climb up on the bank so that we can watch the way these rivers are flowing, so that we can determine which river to participate in, even though we're not of that river. That's who we are as Unitarian Universalists. We are to step out of the river and observe it. Make a conscious decision of how we're going to participate. However, that's difficult to do. Because when you move out of the river of life that you have been born into, a death must occur. How many of you have ever had the experience of breaking through of what some people in the field of counseling call the ideal family of origin image? How many of you have ever found yourself defending a way of life or defending the behavior of people that a year later you look back and say, I can't believe I was defending that? How many of us have a hard time moving out of a river and then beginning to evaluate it objectively rather than maintaining loyalty to the river and finding ourselves being defensive? The process of coming out of that river is a process of loss, is a process of grief, is a process of giving up loyalties to a system and a family and a culture and a way of life in which you were loyal to. Because when you move out of that river, you've got to let that go and become more objective. Are we objective about ourselves? I remember recently somebody was saying to me, you're pretty intense about something. And I'm going, No, I'm not. I mean, we do that. You're angry. No, I'm not. You seem pretty happy about that. No, I'm just neutral. I'm not happy. Don't we do that? I mean, we can't see ourselves objectively because we're in a river and we're defending the loyalties of that river and we get trapped. We literally get trapped in those rivers. Recently, I've been reading some words about Islamic mysticism and taking from that perspective. This is how we would describe coming out of a river that I'm talking about. They would say that each and every one of us, at the core of who we are, there is light, and that we are beings of light. And then when you look at not official religions, but usually the mysticisms of particular religious traditions, no matter what they are, you do find this common element of conversation that who we are as human beings, we are beings of light. And they would say that in that tradition, that in order for that light to really be nurtured and for you to come and live out of that sense of being a being of light, you have to come out of that river. But coming out of that river is a death. So here we have a being of light moving through death so that they can experience a greater amount of light of who they are. So it's an odd thing. You have light moving through death to experience more light. But do we indeed do that? I can remember in graduate school, I had this system of beliefs and way of doing counseling that I was pretty pleased and pretty proud of, but it was kind of its own thing put together. And on the first day there, one of the supervisors said, "Well, I hope you're going to be able to put that aside to learn what you came here to learn." And I went, "Wait a minute, I'm not putting my thing aside. I came here to write about my thing, to experiment with my thing. I'm going to do my thing." And she said, "Well, you might be able to do that postgraduate work. But in this graduate program, you're going to learn this." I tell you, I was very disappointed. Very disappointed. And I must say, for several days, angry about that. But in a way, she was telling me, you've got to put a death to the way you are and to the way you are being in this world. And you're going to have to let that go to learn this. And later, if you want to integrate it, you can integrate it. But not now. You've got to come out of that river that you were in. You've got to own that who you are, the light of who you are. Let go of how you understand the world. Let go of your values in some ways. Let go of your loyalties in some ways. And come in and experience a new, a different teaching, a different understanding of the world. And indeed, an understanding that would give me a greater sense of the world perspective and also a place where the light within me could shine in a greater way. What's curious about Unitarian Universalism, as opposed to a belief system, a different religious belief system that has specific tenets or belief propositions that you have to adhere to in order to be an official member of that group. Because in that system, you have all these different individual beliefs, and you get funneled into a particular belief system and a particular way of life, and it's very narrow at the end because you have to be conformed to that. And in Unitarian Universalism, we honor the uniqueness and the light in each and every one of us. And our goal is, how do we facilitate that which is in you to come out and really get out of the way so that which is in you can come out and find expression, and so that when I look at this church, I don't see a movement toward a funnel. I see all different individual lights shining, and how can we, when we are our best, facilitate the shining of all these different lights, not channeling into one stream that there's some external belief system that's going to bring us to the light. The light is within us, and it's our responsibility as spiritual beings to somehow facilitate the greater shining of the light that is in each and every one of us. That's the difference between Unitarian Universalism and some other religious tradition. And it's a bit more difficult at times to do that. Because sometimes I don't necessarily believe I have that light within me. Sometimes I have a conversation in my head that is really self-shaming. Sometimes I have found myself in life where I say, don't say what you want to say because I'm afraid of rejection. So I live in this river and surround myself with beliefs that really dim the light that is within me, and I do it. It's bad enough, we know our culture does it, but sometimes I do it to myself. As a counselor, we are very cautious about looking at somebody's history and understand somebody's history, knowing what we might bump into along those lines. But as a minister in the pulpit and in the parish, I can say that at the center of who you are, there is this light. And it is our spiritual responsibility to organize our community and how we interact with one another and how we have food with one another and how we do picnics with one another and we meet in the group Closing the Gap and we have the singles meeting and we have Developing Your Own Theology and all those different expressions of who we are. How do we move the light within you to shine. And ever increasingly so. So when we celebrate new members, and when we celebrate our life, in essence, we are new members each and every day if we are stepping out of the river that we were in the day before. So I step out of the river and I familiarize myself with the valley and I can see the mountain range. I may choose to get back in that river with a different mindset. I may choose to say, egads, I'm never going back into that river again. I may choose to find a different river. I may choose to climb a mountain. I may choose to do many things. But until I finally get to the bank of the river and able to take a deep breath, I have no choice. I'm struggling in that same river all the time. And it's our spiritual obligation and responsibility to ourselves, as well as our community, to step out of the river and meet on the bank.